Hey there, welcome to another edition of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm your host, Lauren Fox. This week we'll welcome Corey Parker, Bedford High School Athletic Director, as well as basketball commentator and analyst Andrew Hansen. Corey and I are going to discuss opportunities available for students who don't play on school-sanctioned varsity team, and we'll also discuss LARPing. If you don't know what that is, you might want to stick around. Andrew Hansen's my other guest. He'll be a regular guest, too. Hansen spent 4 years as an all-Ivy baseball player with Princeton before playing independent minor league ball and moving on to a law career. Along the way, he's written some clever sports books and also done some in-depth analysis of the NBA. I'm hoping that Hansen's going to be like Stanford Steve on the Scott Van Pelt show, but I'm about half a foot shorter than Scott Van Pelt, and I still have my hair. So I guess I got that going for me. Hansen and I are going to touch on a few topics of national importance. We'll talk about Tiger Woods coming back to the golf course, whether NBA players should be able to skip college, Ben Simmons of the Sixers' inability to shoot free throws, whether Eli Manning should have been benched, and the topic for debate of the week, whether NBA players should have to go to college. We'll also touch rapid fire on today's NBA players and who should be Hall of Famers. No real statistic analysis, just feel for the guys who have been in the league the longest. And some of the names that are on that list will surprise you that these guys are still drawing NBA paychecks. We are, at this moment, through with fall sports at the high school and club levels. We have moved on to winter. It's now on to indoor track, hoops on the hardwood, skiing, hockey, and more. And I know I've mentioned this before, but as a kid growing up in Southern California, it was easy to play everything all the time. If you wanted to play baseball, you found a field and it was sunny. Here, winter sports are winter sports. Skiing, hockey, you name it. One thing that does is it makes it harder to specialize. You love baseball. Awesome. You can hit all year if you can find a facility. But you need to either be in the weight room or playing something else. The coaches and the administrators in this town have embraced this philosophy. It's not a bad thing. It keeps players fresh, makes sure they aren't burned out, teaches them skills for other sports, balance, footwork, court vision, field vision, leadership. Where the pendulum once swung to specialization, making sure that kids would excel in one sport, it's gone back the other way. There are other leadership skills and lessons that can be learned in different sports. And to be honest, all these years later, it's way more fun to have something to do after school or after work than just going home and sitting down in front of the TV. So buckle in for the next 45 minutes or so. Let us know what you think of the new format on our Facebook page. And eventually I will actually populate that. That can be found on foxonsports.com, Fox with two X's. And we'll be right back with Corey Parker on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. We are joined, as usual, I guess it hasn't been every week, but close to it, with Corey Parker, who is the Bedford High School Athletic Director. And if you didn't know that by now, you haven't really been listening. But Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So you had a couple days off at Thanksgiving, or days off, I guess, as it were, where you're not at sporting events till all hours of the night. Is that a welcome break in your first semester here as the AD?
Yeah, I think it's a welcome break for any athletic director. Certainly between state championships and winter sports kicking off with tryouts, you try to maximize that time and cook dinner at home a few nights and read the kids' bedtime story prior to being back at sporting events, which pretty much heat up Saturday. And the second was a lot of scrimmages starting, and then it gets busy again until about March 1st or so. So it's, you try to take advantage of that time and spend it as much as possible with family. And being Thanksgiving, it always kind of helps and lends itself to a great holiday to see family and friends.
Yeah, and a little bit of football and a little bit of napping on the couch, if you're lucky.
Not so much napping with a 4 and a 6 year old.
That's true. I was going to say, yeah.
But definitely the couch got some use. There's no question about that.
That's good. Well deserved. So the other piece, I guess, that goes along with the athletic department is the kids who don't play organized high school sports. And your title, you're the athletic director, but you're also the dean of wellness.
Sure.
What fitness options are available for the kids who aren't playing an organized team sport?
Yeah, so obviously built in with the Bedford curriculum, there is a level of activity that you have to participate in for graduation requirements. So we have Wellness 1, we have Wellness 2, which have activity every other day, for 80 minutes built into their curriculum, which is great. We also offer team sports, strength and conditioning, to other options that are elective-based that kids are required to complete for graduation purposes. So curriculum-wise, it's kind of nice that they build in at least 2.5 years worth of academic activity for the best way to kind of explain that. But what's really great is after school hours, we do provide as much as possible great resources here at school for the kids to take part in and be active 3 days a week right after school. We have a stipend position of a staff member who's pretty well known and well versed in the weight room. And so they're in the weight room from 2:45 to about 4:30, 3 days a week. And that's open to any student who wants to take advantage of that. So not only is our weight room, which I consider one of the best in the state, not only is it available to our kids to take part and utilize, there's someone in there who knows what they're doing, who can help with proper technique, proper form, which ultimately at the end of the day is more important than how many reps you actually do and doing it correctly. And so that's a great usage there. You know, outside of the athletic department, if you will, there's great opportunities with tremendous clubs that we have here at school. Crew is the first one that comes to mind, which is year-round opportunity for kids, where there's about 100 kids or so that take part in our crew program. So although it's not under the athletic umbrella, if anyone's tried to row before, it's a great feat to be able to do so. And the program that they run is top-notch. And if you come in any afternoon in the fall or certainly in the spring, you'll see about 25 ergs up and down the hallway where kids are getting after it and rowing here at school when they can't be on the water in the Merrimack. So that's a great opportunity for kids. But then we also have, you know, other ways of being very active. And the one thing that comes to mind that Associate Principal Bob Jokas runs is the LARP program, which is live action role play. And it's a trip to see because you got about 25 to 35 kids after school that are fully invested in this and completely get into costume. And it's a pretty active group when you consider their live action role playing that they do. They've kind of built a castle behind the school in the woods, and it's a pretty cool way of getting pretty active. I must admit, some of the days they come in, you can very obvious they've been getting after it for a good hour and a half or so running around. So, you know, anyway, kids, especially these day and age with social media and electronic options for them, any way we can keep kids moving around and getting their steps and maybe burning some sweat, I think it's a good thing to do.
So we are with Corey Parker, the Bedford High Athletic Director, and I'm picking my jaw up off the floor because I knew about crew, but I guess I had always assumed that crew was a sanctioned athletic program tied to the athletic department. The real shocker for me is the live action role play, which, okay, I had no idea that even existed. I knew that it existed as a thing. I didn't know that it existed as at the high school. How does something like that come to be, and how does the crew program get to the level of strength that it has?
Tremendous adult involvement. I think Bob Jizokas, for the LARP program, speaking for that one, is I believe he's been the originator and leader of it, if you will, from the get-go. As to how it formulated, that was before my time, but I could say how it ran and how great of an opportunity it is for kids that are into that interest to be able to do that a couple days, 3 days a week here in school is just really cool to see. And it's his office is right across from mine. So after school, you could see kids getting into full gear in there and armor and
awesome.
Pirates. And it's pretty cool to kind of see them come out of there and transfer, if you will, for a little while, or transform, I should say, here after school. The crew program, I know, is one that, you know, I've tried to get a little more involved with just out of interest for the kids and involvement. And Lori Ashu, who's an unbelievably dedicated parent here in town, who pretty much got it off the ground and has grown it from the get-go. You know, they operate like a full-blown varsity program does as far as the expectations, as far as the requirements and the physical buy-in and commitment that you have to have to be a part of that. It's pretty impressive. And a lot of the kids who are in their off season, I know some of them try to take advantage of crew and do that, as it's a great physical and cardio opportunity for the kids to do something different. And it's very obvious that they work their tail off in that. And I think they're pretty successful in it across the state and competing in regional tournaments down on the Charles and in the fall and the spring season. So it's, again, it comes from very dedicated individuals, extremely organized, parent buy-in, kid buy-in, and then ultimately it just strengthens on an annual basis.
That's that you use the word, it is very impressive, and it's something that you hear a lot of around town. So that one as a standalone is just the numbers are insane. With what you have within your athletic department, what percentage of students are in some kind of a school-sanctioned athletic program?
That's a good question. I don't have all the data to show that yet. This fall, we had 380 student-athletes participate in a fall athletic team. When you think of the school being about 1,500, you know, that's a good chunk of the population that are committed to an after-school activity. Right now, we have 110 more than that. We have 490 currently signed up or competing or trying out for current various winter opportunities right now. So when you, if you're talking about a third of the population at any time participating in a sport, I think, you know, as an athletic director where you really want to promote kids getting involved, I think it's a pretty solid figure to see that we're really trying to hit all student athletes or all students who aspire to be a part of an athletic program through the various opportunities we have. And so when you look at that and then you look at the robust numbers of our other co-curriculars, crew included, the play, band has over 100 kids in their program, you know, I think it strengthens the overall notion as to high school isn't just about, you know, 7:55 to 2:35. It's about getting involved. It's about meeting friends, learning lessons. And, you know, I think we're in a pretty healthy place with athletics currently as to that percentage. So it'll be exciting to see kind of the winter, the spring, and then kind of cross-referencing the dual and three-sport athletes and looking at really how many kids are involved. And that's certainly something we'll be presenting probably in April as kind of a snapshot as to the year and how it's gone.
And that's something, too, you mentioned the dual and three-sport athletes. That is, you've seen the pendulum kind of swing back and forth where it was everybody's playing multiple sports to you have to specialize by the time you're 10 to now you're seeing a little bit of kind of the generalist sort of attitude at this point. What are you seeing as far as kids playing multiple sports or focused on one and training throughout the year specific to that sport?
A little both. I don't think the trend at the high school level has changed too much. I think before they get to this building, they've kind of dedicated and made their decisions as to if they're going to be able to compete in multiple sports here at the high school level. Junior year is a big tick year for level of commitment and the idea of participating at the collegiate level as to do I continue in multiple sports at that point or do I kind of focus one and then try to get better, stronger, faster in the off season. That really kind of highlights that individual sport. So at the high school level, I don't think the drop off is happening in this building. I think it's more driven at the social climate as to kids feeling the pressures of really committing to 9 to 11 months a year of one specific sport. And so that's happening, unfortunately, at the ages of 7, 8, 9, 10. And so before they're even across the hall at Lurgio in seventh grade, I think a lot of them have somewhat wrote off certain sports of interest to focus on training or off season of their select sport, if you will. You know, my big thing is not to necessarily try to change that culture, but at the high school level, encourage everyone to come out four teams at the ninth grade level. You know, what's great about our programs is we do offer a ton of freshman level teams, and we're able to provide more opportunities here with freshmen than maybe even Lurgio could have as seventh and eighth graders. And so if a student athlete doesn't make the team or doesn't hit the level of involvement they aspire to have at the seventh and eighth grade level, there's still a tremendous opportunity here as ninth graders to kind of re-energize, refocus, and get back into that level. Because the last thing I'd want to do is hear a kid, a junior, senior year, say, geez, I wish I tried this earlier. You know, I love shot put. I wish I tried this freshman and sophomore year. And you know, you do still get that on occasion across the board, but you hope kids want to stick it out with multiple sports. I think we've talked about it at a time where the dual and multi-sport athlete is, I think, such a benefit to the overall CrossFit training of a body and the overall competitiveness to the student athlete. And you see that a lot of college coaches, they want kids participating in multiple sports. It's more coach involvement. It's more direction from adults. It's more competing versus playing a fall sport and then just working out in the weight room or kicking the ball around with futsal for the other months of the year and then only having that one season to showcase. So, you know, by the high school level, I think a lot of kids have already made their determination as to what they want to do. And you know, certainly we welcome those conversations. And I know from a coaching staff perspective, you know, all our coaches are in full support of kids playing multi-sports for Bedford High School and committing themselves. And there's enough days and enough months in the calendar where they could commit themselves to multiple sports.
And that's it's a great approach as an athletic director. It's a great approach for the coaches as well to realize that there are benefits that can be garnered from a kid playing three versus one. And, you know, whether it's competition, whether it's ability to think fast on their feet, if it's a quarterback that also plays point guard, there are a lot of benefits to be gained from that, of course. So back with Corey Parker, the Bedford High Athletic Director and Dean of Wellness. We've discussed the philanthropic endeavors that the athletic department's involved in, but what highlights do you have for us going into the winter season? I know we talked about some things that were in the process of being formulated. Is there anything come to fruition at this point?
Yeah, so not to fruition just because we haven't had any home events, but again, working directly with Bedford Community Food Pantry, I think that's kind of our big highlight that we want to try to focus on this winter is for home basketball games on Friday evenings. We're going to be taking donations and non-perishable items specific to kind of a wish list from the Bedford Community Pantry. And so we kicked this off on December 15th when the girls have opening night versus Concord. And so that evening we'll be heavily promoting all the next 3 weeks, really, certain items that the community pantry is aspiring for us to kind of help fill the void in their offices at that time, and using that through the Boys and Girls programs this winter. That's kind of our annual kickoff. And we're also trying to get creative with them with some kind of fill in the backpack or being able to provide long-term meals over vacation weeks, mainly December vacation holiday week, and then certainly February again, in trying to hit, you know, needs at the community pantry. We're kind of taking a lead from them as to what the key items are that hopefully we can get our teams behind, get our parents behind, and utilize the athletic games as that promotional aspect for those. And then certainly as the winter goes along, if this is something that can take off, we'd love to kind of embark in the hockey games as well, which are really well attended, and try to do the same at those games. So that's the big thing right now. Obviously, from head coaches, you know, we're working with them now and really trying to identify people in the youth community, whether it be ice hockey or basketball. Predominantly, those are the two team sports in the winter. And just trying to make sure that the youth know about our games, know about our coaches, from the volunteer coaches here in town, and being able to work with our coaches if they need anything, and just try to strengthen that connection of continuity from you know, K through first and second grade basketball all the way through the 12th grade team playing on Tuesday and Friday nights. Hopefully we can just continually strengthen that, the Bedford name, and all for one mindset, and how our coaches and the youth and working together is something that we're striving to improve with.
We look forward to seeing that as it continues to grow, and it's something that I've seen firsthand as a youth baseball coach and coaching basketball as well, where you get the high school kids back involved. They're more than happy to be part of it, and the kids absolutely love it. They would rather listen to a high school kid come and talk to them about the proper way to throw down to second base for a catcher than for me to talk about it as an old man. It makes a big difference for those kids to see that this is somebody who was in my shoes not all that long ago, and look where they are now.
Yeah, exactly true. I think it's a great benefit both ways. I think for the high school kid to be able to not force, that's the wrong word, but put the student athletes in a situation to have to interact and have to communicate with the youth of town. I think that's a great opportunity, and you hit it right on. I remember the high school team showing up at our youth camps, and I remembered much more than that than anything any adult said. So those interactions can be really beneficial to, you know, just overall experience. And hopefully we keep kids interested in all opportunities. And, you know, ultimately they're being recognized on senior night, you know, 10, 12 years from now when they're Bedford Bulldogs.
It's amazing how quickly that happens. So getting back to Thanksgiving, what is your favorite Thanksgiving side item?
Thanksgiving side item.
Yeah.
Okay. So
go with anything that shows up on your plate, but
sure. I would probably say stuffing and gravy.
All right. There you go.
But I think gravy is probably the most important component of all of Thanksgiving, because gravy kind of enhances all things. It's like saying, you know, salt and pepper. So if I wanted to be really critical, I'd probably say gravy, but I'm a big stuffing fan. Stuffing, mashed potatoes and turkey is pretty much all I go to. No squash for me, no green bean casserole, no sweet potato casserole, which is really dessert. I'm a basic kind of guy, I guess, when it comes to that. So although the plate may have a couple of helpings, it's typically those three items.
Corey Parker, Thanksgiving minimalist and Bedford High Athletic Director, thank you for the time. We appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, Brian. Look forward to it.
Back here on Bedford 105.1, I'm Lauren Fox, joined by Andrew Hansen on Fox on Sports. And we will now hit a few topics of national interest and relate them back to what is going on here in the town of Bedford or youth sports in general. And the three things that really seem to be on people's minds this week are the water cooler talk, if you have one of those, or the Keurig, if you have one of those in the office. The first is Eli Manning. 210 games in a row he had started for the Giants. Patriots fans absolutely hate Eli Manning, but if you even put that aside, you have to realize that this guy has had a wonderful career. He is a what I would call a middle-class quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. He's not even by Joe Flacco standards. He is not an elite quarterback, but he is a guy who is able to manage a game well and win for his team when he needs to, and he's able to. And back when he and Tom Coughlin managed to win a couple of Super Bowls together, they put together some great teams. This year, the Giants off to a rough start. This is a season that you will not salvage if you are the New York Giants football club. And now they're at a point where they say, hey, we're going to bring in, I didn't even know Geno Smith was still in the league. We're going to bring in Geno Smith, and he's going to be our quarterback for the foreseeable future, but Eli Manning might come back. So the question then becomes, all right, you're taking a guy who has laid it on the line for his team for a really long time, and the numbers that go along with that, too. We were talking about it with some of the basketball players earlier. That's basically 15 years in the league. He's the guy who came into the league in 2004, drafted by the Chargers, kind of famously said, I don't want to play in San Diego. Went to New York, played there, and has played well. He's won a couple Super Bowls. Is he a Hall of Famer? Not entirely certain, but he's been the face of their franchise for over a decade. So if you're in a situation where you are the front office or the coaching staff of the Giants, how do you make this call at this time of the year?
You don't. You don't make this call. You don't handle it this way. And that's why the reaction both in New York and throughout the country has been so strong. It's hard to even try and justify what they've done. They're 2-9. They've lost their three top receivers. Have you heard of Odell Beckham Jr.? He's been out for the year. Brandon Marshall, their number two. He's been out since, I think, week two. Their third receiver, Shepard, has been out for the last couple weeks with migraines. So you give Eli Manning none of his top three receivers. Your coach, Ben McAdoo, is one of the most conservative play callers. After 5 weeks, he had to turn over play calling duties to one of the assistant coaches.
I would say he is completely overmatched as an NFL coach.
And in
so many ways, dealing with the media, dealing with his team, like he's not winning his war on any fronts.
He is
not even close.
And they're 2-9. And what this appears as is well, let's try and justify our 2-9 record by blaming it on Eli. But he's been the rock. He's been the one constant. He hasn't complained. He's come in and done his job, and that's what he's been throughout his career. He's been, you know, an upstanding citizen, a role model. I mean, 210 straight games, second longest streak in the NFL for quarterbacks behind only Brett Favre. To do that is an absolute wonderful achievement. It says so much about his character, and the way he's handled it has just been amazing. You know, he was almost brought to tears in the locker room as he's being interviewed discussing this situation. And that just shows how much he's put into the streak, you know, fighting through the bumps and bruises to be out there every week for his team. And he is at least a borderline, if not a Hall of Famer, with the two Super Bowls. You know, I think he's top 10 all time now in yards and touchdowns. So he'll probably get there. And to treat him this way in a 2-9 season when Ben McAdoo is probably going to lose his job, he's grasping for straws, and it's a shame.
It's certainly weird. Now, you hit on one quick thing in there about taking it with class. And even though he doesn't necessarily agree with the decision, he's handled himself very well. What kind of lesson is there in that for youth sports, high school sports, that a young kid who's watching can take from that?
Well, first of all, he has the utmost respect for his organization, his coaches, to not, you know, lash back and complain. He just took it like a professional and said, this is the decision that was made, so I'm going to come in here and do my job, which is now to support the other quarterbacks. The other quarterbacks who have far less talent and experience than him are being selected to start the game and play the game, and he's just immediately turned his focus to assisting his teammates. And the reports have come out this week that he's been in the cafeteria with the third string quarterback going over the playbook, trying to make sure that he's ready to play when he gets in, perhaps at the end of this week's game or at some point in the season. They're going to take a look at him as well. So he immediately turned his focus to his teammates. And you know, any kind of lesson you would want as a teammate, as an athlete, I think he's lived it in this week with the way that he's handled himself. He hasn't complained, and he has just decided to support the team and do the best he can for the role that's been chosen for him.
It's there's a lot to be said about that, and particularly with young kids who might not understand, hey, why am I not starting? I feel like I'm good enough in this situation. You never know when you're going to have the opportunity to. And you never know when you're going to have the opportunity. First of all, that. And second of all, you never know when you're going to have the opportunity to get that role right back. You know, all it's going to take is Geno Smith rolls out right, sprains an ankle. That's that. Okay, Eli, we need you again. You got to be ready, bud. And now this is an opportunity to prove yourself over and above and try to somehow lead the team back and put yourself into more of a hero role. Because the fans are rooting for you at this point. They might have, a few weeks ago, they might have said, well, you know, yeah, maybe he's past his prime. Now he's got the opportunity to be a hero. And if he doesn't succeed, well, he didn't get the reps in practice this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reminder that you always have to be ready. You never know when your name is going to get called. And by the same token, you have to cherish every moment that you're playing. And he is a guy who seems like he is playing every game like it's his last. You have to have that mentality to play in 210 straight games in the NFL. You have to be out there. You have to want to be out there to overcome the bumps and bruises. And you can tell that he cherishes playing. He cherishes every game. And that's the best mentality to have, because you never know when it's going to get taken away, whether it's injury or a coach's decision or the end of your career after high school, after college. And he's a role model in that way, too.
So moving to another topic, which probably involves preparation, Ben Simmons saw a weird thing the other night. They were playing the Wizards, and in the fourth quarter, I can't imagine going to that game. The Wizards sent Ben Simmons to the line 24 or 12 times. He shot 24 free throws. Second of all, you have to wonder why the NBA doesn't legislate something about a foul away from the ball being more penalized than just two shots, because that just got to the point of ridiculous, but that's a story for another day. But Simmons went to the line 24 times. They were trying to get back into the game. The Wizards were. He made 12 of them. They decreased the Sixers' lead by 9 points, so obviously it worked. But you really would never want that to happen in the third quarter of a game, turn a 12-minute quarter into an hour. But Ben Simmons, in his first year in the league, 20 games in, shooting 56% from the free throw line, shot about 67% when he was at Louisiana State. He does have five nicknames, so there's that: Fresh Prince, Benny, the Yank, Big Ben, and the Wizard of Oz. I didn't know that, but Ben Simmons is a touch player to me. He's not. You look at guys in the league, Shaq, who famously was the hack of Shaq, the horrible free throw shooter. You look at a guy like Ben Simmons, who's a guard, a point guard. You wouldn't think that this is the kind of guy who would struggle from the free throw line. What causes a guy like Ben Simmons to have problems from the line like that?
Well, I think it's just a lack of being conscientious. This is the number one overall pick in the NBA draft 2 years ago. He's known for a long time that he has the potential to be an NBA player and potentially a great NBA player. At some point, you have to take it upon yourself to say, I am going to be at least a competent free throw shooter. It's one of the most important things in basketball. It's a free opportunity for points. It can win or lose playoff games, championship games. And he hasn't taken it upon himself at some point to make sure that he can be a good free throw shooter. You know, he's an outstanding athlete and basketball player. You know, you mentioned the statistics of 18 points a game, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. He's shooting over 50% from the field, in large part because he's getting a lot of layups and dunks from his athleticism. And last night, he showed some amazing things in Boston. He dribbled to his right, and he hit a jumper from the elbow with his left hand. Okay, he shoots left-handed.
Yeah.
He also dribbled to the right a little bit later in the game and shot a running hook from about 14 feet with his right hand. Made that. He had a reverse putback dunk on a missed jump shot, you know, that was, you know, SportsCenter top 10 worthy. And this is all in, you know, one game. And he's had two triple doubles already in 20 games as a rookie. So he's an outstanding basketball player, but it's inexcusable to be a 56% free throw shooter right now. And he's 0-for-8 from 3-point land. He hasn't made a single 3-pointer in this day and age of, you know,
everybody's dropping him in. Porzingis is dropping him in. Yeah.
You know, Houston's shooting over 50 a game.
Yeah.
And you know, the analytics say you have to be able to make 3-pointers to keep up, and he hasn't made a single one. To me, his shot is a little bit broken. I mean, it's not Lonzo Ball broken, but if one of his nicknames is the Wizard of Oz right now, he's certainly not the Wizard of Shooting.
Yes.
And he doesn't have to be the Wizard of Shooting. He doesn't have to be Steph Curry. And not everybody can be Steph Curry. But let's at least, you know, get serious and become a 70-75% free throw shooter if we're the number one overall pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah, it's to kind of take this back to high school and youth sports, if we're thinking about that, you cited Andre Drummond early. You and I talked about it off air. This is something that you can improve upon. And this is something that if you're willing to put the work in, you can get it done. Drummond was a 35 to 45% free throw shooter his entire career. Basically, now he's at 63%. And that is obviously due to the fact that the guy worked on it and realized that was a deficiency in his game. He had the opportunity to do it, and he took it.
That was his range for 5 years in the NBA. It was right in that 35 to 40, 42% every single year. And he's getting to the line a lot as a big man.
Yeah.
You know, he's shooting.
And he was getting hacked.
You know, 2 years ago, he shot 7 free throws a game, and he shot 35%. Last year, he shot 38%. But he obviously got in the gym, and he said, I'm finally going to figure this out, because this year he's shooting 63%, you know, which isn't bad for a huge big man who can, you know, who's getting 13 or 14 rebounds a game. You know, a lot of the centers in the NBA don't shoot that high of a percentage. But if you're over 60, that's at least acceptable. But the question is, why did it take him 6 years in the NBA to get to that point? You know, everyone who's played basketball on the youth level, you started practicing free throws when they were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. So, it's just the message is, you got to focus on the fundamentals early and take it seriously if you're going to, you know, reach your potential. And that's the key. Not everybody can be Andre Drummond averaging a double-double in the NBA with his unbelievable athleticism. But the challenge is, you know, can you meet your potential at every level that you're at? And to do that, you've got to master the fundamentals.
It certainly helps. And sometimes some of these guys get away with it strictly because of they're phenomenal athletes. And the glaring stuff really doesn't show up until they get into the NBA. And, you know, Drummond had a good college career at UConn and was drafted highly for that athleticism. You look at a guy that I would probably say is one of the top three centers in the NBA all time, Shaq. There were points in time where they'd come out of camp and as some know, I'm a Laker fan, or I was a Laker fan. I root for the Celtics now because I live here, but Shaq would come out of camp and wind up shooting 70% from the free throw line for about 2 weeks, and then he would just regress right back to his mean. So it's one of those things. Yes, you certainly need to get in the gym and do it, but you need to keep doing it. It's not like it's a magical skill that once you have it, you're good and you have it forever. This isn't a video game. It's you need to continually work on it, which obviously carries down to youth sports. Now, I guess I'll reintroduce who we are. I'm Lauren Fox. He's Andrew Hansen. We're on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. And the third story, and who knows how he's doing today, being Friday, Tiger Woods coming out of the gate 3 under yesterday, hit, 12 of 18 greens in regulation, kind of sprayed the ball over the yard, really. And out of character for him, the thing that really saved his round was his putting.
Well, the overall takeaway from yesterday's first round in the Hero World Challenge is that Tiger is back. There's no doubt, and this time is different. You could see it. I watched the entire round. He's not holding back now. And it's exciting because he's arguably the greatest golfer of all time. You know, the only legitimate argument against that would be Jack Nicklaus. And he was at the top of the world. And he's now had 4 back surgeries.
I'd put him as the most dominant golfer of all time.
No doubt.
He didn't have a foil. He came in, revolutionized the game. They had 2 tiger-proof courses for this guy. Why, I don't really know, because those were the same courses that everybody was playing. But, hey, that was what they did. They tiger-proofed him. And probably to make it more of a game, because the U.S. Open in 97, when he won by, 12 strokes, like, he was making the rest of those guys on the tour look like us. And Nicklaus never did that, possibly because he had Palmer and Player, and there were guys who were his foils, but Tiger just came in and walked all over these guys, and that was that.
Well, we've all heard and know very well guys like Phil Mickelson and Ernie Els. These guys are multiple major winners, and they were all in their prime together.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was that dominant, you know, with some legitimate competition, you know, it just speaks volume at how unique he is. And that's why it's so exciting to see him back, because whether you root for him or not, to see him healthy and to think about him, you know, being back in the mix at majors and competing against the young guns, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, it will really be exciting to see him compete and be healthy against the new crop of stars.
That'll be fun. And the other thing, I have probably watched 1 major in the last 5 years. And I'm talking about a major on a Sunday where there's a degree of excitement. But I can tell you exactly where I was when he won that U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in 97. That was, to use the phrase that sticks with the 90s, that was must-see TV back then. And at that point in time, people who weren't golf fans were watching golf. I mean, granted, I was playing much more golf back then, but Dan Le Batard was on ESPN this morning, and he said, if you were to ask my 13-year-old twin daughters who they can name who's a golfer, the one person they can name is Tiger Woods. And you ask most of America, name a golfer, and most people are going to say Tiger Woods. They're not going to say Matt Kuchar. Like, it's, and no disrespect to any of those guys. They've had a great career, but this is the guy. He was the video game guy. He was dropped in rap lyrics. Like, he was the guy. And he's had ups and downs like you wouldn't believe. I remember growing up in Southern California. I'm, I think, a year or two older than he is. And hearing this name of this kid who was this young kid who was dominating these tournaments that my buddies were playing in tournaments. And how'd you do? I did great, but this guy just walked all over us and all of us. And to see that, of course, for any of us to say what would happen if we were handed $100 million or a couple $100 million, would my life be the same? Probably not. As much as I want to say I'm a really down to earth human being, things are going to change. And he's had to make some serious adjustments to his life based upon things that have changed. He's had a lot of public embarrassment. And for him to put himself out there again, where this isn't a team sport where you can hide among 9 guys on the field or 11 guys on the field, this is you and the ball. And if you go out there and you have a horrible round yesterday, all of a sudden everybody says, he's done. So the amount of preparation and focus that goes into playing around like that, I don't know that people really appreciate what it takes for him to get back there, particularly after the surgeries.
Right. Well, just from the health and fitness part of it, you know, 4 back surgeries, and the 4th one was back fusion surgery in April of 2017, and that's why he hasn't played in over 300 days. So he's obviously one who has taken his fitness and his health seriously throughout his career. But even somebody who does take it that seriously, you know, can have these challenges, these physical challenges to try and get back in the arena, so to speak. And so that is the number one challenge for him right now. And you mentioned the pressure and the scope, the microscope that he's under because of who he is and his history. And, you know, he's the reason that people are going to tune in and actually watch golf on a Thursday in December or late November.
Yeah.
It's because it's Tiger Woods, and we want to see how he's going to react. That's what people want to know. How is the greatest competitor in golf going to hold up under the challenges that he's facing on any given occasion? And right now, it's the combination of his health coming back and now competing against the best players in the world. And how is he going to fare?
It'll be interesting to see. Well, by the time this airs, it'll air Saturday morning at 9 and Sunday at 9 p.m. So by the time it re-airs, the story may have been written. Sports Illustrated might have its cover for next week.
Don't count him out. I think he's going to win this year at some point.
It's certainly good for the game, and it makes it fun for us to sit here and talk about him. So be back after this on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Bedford 105.1, I'm Lauren Fox, joined by Andrew Hansen, and this is Fox on Sports. We will now do a topic of the week, and this one has been a hot topic in the NBA lately. Do the NBA players need to go to college? So we're each taking one side of this. I am on the yes side. I'm a big fan of March Madness, NCAA tournament. The college sports experience, I think, is important to these kids. They get into school, get the opportunity to go. Some kids obviously stay around, have the opportunity to earn a degree, which has a great deal of value that goes along with it. But of course, you have to stick around and earn a degree. Now, the obvious question from there is, does being in college for 1 year really do you a whole lot of good? You can sit there and shrug your shoulders. I'm not so sure. I think if you're going to enforce a guy to go to college and limit his ability to earn money, you need to have him there for longer than that and set him up with a different opportunity. minor league baseball, major league baseball has done it for years, where you get drafted in. If you have been to college, typically a draft pick will negotiate money so that after they are done playing, or within a certain time between when they sign and when they're done, they can go back to college to earn that degree. And that's valuable because you're not going to be playing forever. It certainly helps you if, even if you have a nice long career and you last until you're 35 or 40, if you have a little bit of business acumen or have been to college, that helps out. Kind of gives the NBA players a bit of a jump start on that. The flip side of it, though, of course, and this is the side that you're on, guys shouldn't have to do it. They should be able to just go right out of the gate. How would you set that up, though?
Well, the reason is, of course, this is America, and you're 18 years old. You have the capacity to contract, to enter into a contract. You're an adult.
I forgot you were a lawyer. That's right. Okay, good.
You know, you can go to the military. If you're old enough to go to the military and you're 18 and the powers that be and the NBA value your talent, you should be able to go. And look at some of the guys who have done it. Kevin Garnett, has anybody heard of him? Kobe Bryant, how did he turn out? You know, there are guys who have done it, Moses Malone, and been Hall of Fame players. And the reason is because they were, you know, once in a generation type players, and the talent evaluators saw that, and everybody knew that they were ready for the NBA, LeBron James. So it's been done many times. Guys have proven that, you know, they can have extraordinary careers without going to college. And because, again, this is America, to me, it just comes down to the basic freedom of, if you're ready to do it, then you should have the right to go do it.
It's hard to argue with that piece of it. The single biggest thing, what is that? I guess there are two pieces that go along with it. One, you cited the Kobe's and Moses Malone's and LeBron's. Those guys are the easy ones to look at and say, yes, this is a great case. There are also a number of complete abject failures that have come out and kind of took the money and ran, or guys who come, and you even see it now, though. You see guys 1 year in the NCAA, they come out, which, again, I think 1 year is not enough. You come out after 1 year, which really isn't even a year, because by the time all said and done, you probably have stopped going to class if that's what you're thinking is going to happen.
Maybe around the end of March, early April.
Maybe. So then you say, what value is the player actually deriving out of being in school for that 1 year? They get a semester's worth of credits and they're done. I'm not saying everybody's doing it. A lot of guys are able to get that degree and work hard and be successful. You're seeing it in the NCAA on the football side now, where guys are 3 years in and have earned a degree and are able to be a graduate transfer at that point, or 4 years in with a redshirt. They can be a graduate transfer. Russell Wilson's one. Jared Stidham, who's the quarterback at Auburn, is another. He started out at Baylor. So there are plenty of guys who stick around and somehow parlay this college career into, okay, I got an undergrad degree and I got a graduate degree. Hey, good on you for doing that. But is college for everybody? Far be it for me to say.
Well, just as it's pretty hard to argue against the basic freedom that's involved with the ability to go work for somebody of your choice who wants to hire you, it's also hard to argue with the generally accepted notion that any time spent in college is going to be beneficial for these young players on many levels. And so with that in mind, the longer they're there, again, you would think the better for their development as a person, as a student, as a teammate, somebody who's learning to live on their own. There's a myriad of benefits that are, you know, universally assumed that are going to come into play for the athletes who go to college, and the longer they stay, the better. So that's hard to argue, and there certainly have been players who've come out of high school and have not fared well as young men in the NBA who are 18 years old and who don't know, you know, haven't learned how to handle themselves in the best way. So there's strong arguments on both sides.
And that's the hardest part, is you've lived the world of minor league baseball. the what you see with teams now is particularly they're signing players out of Latin America who are 16 years old, and they now have the infrastructure in place to make it so that these guys know how to do things that we all take for granted. Checking accounts, rent an apartment, rent furniture if you need to do that, get some sort of transportation. These guys are not on their own like they used to be. And if an NBA team is willing to make that sort of investment in a player, the multi-million dollar investment, you also need to be willing to make an investment in them as a person.
You really do. And the thing that I noticed, the difference between college and professional sports, is that in college, it feels like a family. You know, everybody's there. They're committed for somewhere between 1 and 4 years. In most cases, 4 years. The coaches are there long term. The administration, everybody's there helping each other. When you go to the professional level, it's every man for himself.
Yeah.
Oh, and, and if a team doesn't have the right culture, you know, if you don't have Mark Cuban leading the way and building more of a family culture where people want to be and people are supported, then that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah, and guys just tend to get lost. And don't forget, in all this, the NCAA is a multi-billion dollar organization that I'm gonna show my true colors now. The NCAA is a multi-billion dollar organization that in large part relies on paying players via scholarships a fraction of what their actual income is. So is that fair? Is it not? I don't know. Far be it for me to say, but it'll be interesting to see where this all shakes out with the NCAA. Be back after this on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Bedford 105.1, it is Fox on Sports, and I am joined by Andrew Hansen, who will hopefully be a regular guest with us as we talk about some topics from the world of sports. But we're going to hit what I would hope would be a regular segment on this, which is kind of a thumbs up, thumbs down thing. Trying to figure out who our future NBA Hall of Famers are. And since you've done a lot of analytical work on the NBA in both statistical and haiku form, figured it was appropriate to drag you in. So what we're going to look at is guys who you would think have been in the league for a long time, good careers. We're looking just solely based on games played. Top 20 guys in the league based on games played. So starting off, number one, no surprise here, Dirk Nowitzki.
He's an absolute yes.
Yeah.
And you go with the instinct on him, top 10 scorer of all time, revolutionized the game with his unique moves. The one need fall away jump shot, among other things, greatest international scorer of all time. Thumbs up.
And he also kind of opened the door for some other players who are similar to him to get into the league. The big men that can shoot, the Kevin Durant, the Kristaps Porzingis, the big guys who are credible threats from outside. Yeah, he's been a game changer. All right, number two is going to surprise you a little bit. Feels like he's been around for 1,000 years. I still remember him playing in Arizona. Jason Terry.
No. A gamer?
He's a gamer. He's a good ball player.
A glue guy. Somebody who can help teams win championships. And he's stuck around because of his ability to hit three-pointers, and he's quick. He's not going to hurt you on the defensive end, but no.
All right, number three. And when he came into the league, everybody was thinking, is he obviously the similarities. From North Carolina. Can jump out of the gym, Vince Carter, who is now averaging about 2.4 a game. He's doing his best Willie Mays with the Mets impersonation. But last year he had a great year. Vince Carter, is he a Hall of Famer?
He's a yes. I mean, he's definitely worth the consideration. And I think if you get into the stats, you're probably going to give him the nod. And he strikes you as somebody who stands out with, as you said, he could jump out of the gym. He was one of the high flyers, dunk contest. Memorable with the dunk where he put his elbow
caught the rim.
Basically hung on the rim with his elbow.
You can't do that?
No, never could. Never could. And that's one of the things that sets him apart.
I would say Vince Carter's a yes. Number four, Joe Johnson, product of the University of Alabama.
No.
I would say no, too. He's been an impact guy, but he's always been the best player on a bad team.
And he stands out because he's hit a lot of clutch shots, so you remember him. And he has been around long enough and been a solid scorer, probably in that 18 to 20 points a game range, but just not quite enough, you know, first-team NBA-type performances. Just more of a, you know, all-star, borderline all-star throughout his career.
This next guy, great profile on him in Sports Illustrated a few weeks ago, Jamal Crawford out of the University of Michigan way back when, but talking about in this profile in SI, they really focused on, and Chris Ballard wrote it. If you haven't read it, I highly suggest this is to our audience, looking it up, giving it a quick read on SI, but he's talking about the fact that Jamal Crawford is now, for all intents and purposes, an old guy. He's a sixth man. He's always come off the bench, but he is as much of a gamer as you can be. And to top it all off, he's in his 30s, and he looks like he's about 25.
Well, if they open up a wing at the Naismith Hall of Fame for sixth men,
yep,
he's probably the first one there, maybe along with Kevin McHale. For the main hall, I don't think he gets in.
No.
But he does hold the distinction, I think, of having the most career four-point plays.
Yeah, it's a bizarre artifact, but yeah, that's accurate.
That's his claim to fame.
Yeah. Number six, Richard Jefferson, another Arizona guy. Wow.
I'll go no on him as well.
Yeah, I hate to say it. He's a class act. And the funny thing is, you're looking at all these guys in the top part of this list. The guys who have stuck around are guys who are completely class acts. Don't get in trouble. Great faces for a team. A guy that you can bring in, particularly like you look at Vince Carter. They were bringing basketball to Toronto. And you need somebody who can get out and be in the community and introduce this team to it. And he fit that mold perfectly. And it's tough being on an expansion team. But Richard Jefferson, I would say, no chance. Great player, not a Hall of Famer.
And you're right. He brings a lot to the locker room. I think in the last couple of years, he started some sort of a podcast. And so he does have that dedication to the game, you know, more than just on the court. So he's a memorable guy, but not for statistics in the way that he could be considered.
Number seven, games played. I go yes on this guy. Tony Parker, San Antonio Spurs.
All right, I'm going to go no.
Okay.
For me, he's a key cog in the Spurs championship years. A great point guard, more of a traditional point guard than you see today with a lot of the top players because he wasn't all about scoring. So he was a great facilitator for Popovich, but he didn't ever... I don't think he ever led the league or was even probably top five in points or assists. And I just don't think he probably has the career numbers to stack up.
He really doesn't. He's at about 16 a game, six assists a game. It's more of he almost falls into that Phil Rizzuto mold of and who knows? I mean, you're going to look down the road, and I have a feeling a lot of the guys who are on those Spurs championship teams are just going to wind up in because they were on the Spurs championship team. And they've just done a great job, Popovich has, of bringing in guys who are complete character guys on those teams. And it started with David Robinson way back when, and that has become kind of the franchise's model, and Tony Parker fits right into that.
Well, how about Manu? Is he on that list?
Manu is at 14, so I have him as a yes.
I'll go yes with him as well. You know, he's revolutionized the Euro step.
Yeah.
You know, he brought that to the U.S. And
teaching our kids bad habits.
And you just talk about a winner, and he's done it on the international scene as well. In the Olympics, he's been a standout, so with the multiple championships, I think he might get the nod.
He's 40 years old. I never put that together. 13 and a half a game, 3.8 assists a game, sixth man of the year, all rookie, four-time champion, two-time All-NBA. And he's Manu. So, yeah, it's hard to argue against him. Number eight, crazy the number of international players on here, too. Pau Gasol. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no brainer. He's in. Number nine, there's not even a hesitation in my mind, LeBron James.
Oh, he's number nine in games played. Current players.
Yeah, of the current players. And the other thing that blew my mind, I was watching ESPN this morning, he's in his 15th year.
It's hard to believe. I mean,
I don't know what that says about the rest of us, but yeah.
Yeah, he's a no-brainer. We got to go turn to the discussion of best of all time when we're talking about
right,
LeBron.
Exactly.
And what's he been in, 8 straight NBA finals?
He's an absolute beast. He just picked up his first ejection last week. Amazing in that 1,000-plus games.
Yeah, and that shows. I mean, you know, especially in this day and age, with guys getting 8, 10, 12 technicals a year.
Yeah.
Missing games in the playoffs because of their technicals. You know, he's been a real role model to be in that many intense playoff games and to never be ejected once is remarkable.
Yeah, and it shows a ton of restraint. And this is another one that I say, boy, we must be getting old. Zach Randolph, in his 16th year in the NBA, is number 10 in games played. I feel like he just got into the league. 1,076 games so far for Randolph. I would have a hard time putting him in as a Hall of Famer.
I think he's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, but good player.
Z-Bo.
Z-Bo. Solid career. Number 11, I guess the guy that we can say started it off shooting threes from Creighton, Kyle Korver.
No.
A Hall of Famer. No.
Not a Hall of Famer.
Had a wing for a guy who drops bombs off the bench, that would be the Kyle Korver wing, but no. Yeah, he is in a specific mold. Number 12, I can't believe he's stuck around this long. Tyson Chandler is a no.
He's a no.
You start getting into fringy guys. Mike Miller, still in the league. No.
Because of his three-point shooting.
Yes.
He's hung around a long time.
Number 14, we talked about Manu. Number 15, Andre Iguodala.
No, but very impressive career.
He's had a good one. He's another Arizona guy, yeah.
Interesting how he's turned from a star in Philadelphia to more of a role player, you know, sixth man in Golden State. And he's really acclimated well and been crucial to their championship success. But I'd say just on the outside looking in.
So two more interesting guys that we're going to hit. The other guys are fringe guys. Number 16, Carmelo.
Yes.
Yeah?
Begrudgingly. Because he cannot win in the playoffs. Never has. He won in college.
Yeah.
Okay, but we probably need to give some credit to Jim Boeheim and the rest of the Syracuse roster.
Yeah.
He has not done it, and he's just underperformed. And it's happened too many years in a row to blame it on outside circumstances. You know, he's supposed to have been the leader in Denver, in New York, and they haven't won when it's counted.
I will be curious to see what happens this year with OKC. If they can get it together, have the potential to blow the doors off anybody.
But they're under 500.
Yeah, it's the super team that just hasn't gelled yet.
You got to give them a little wiggle room
because
we're only 20 games into the season. But you still would have thought that they'd at least be 500 with those three guys.
You would think. And then number 20, Dwight Howard.
He's in the conversation, and he probably goes in. I mean, he's got to average a career double-double, and he's actually making a renaissance this year. He's had a couple rough seasons, really did not go well in L.A. or Houston. But or Atlanta, and
he was
traded for almost nothing.
Yeah,
but he actually had a game this week where he had a couple, you know, posterizing dunks, and so he's still using the athleticism. He still has it, and he seems a little bit more committed this year. And I think his lifetime numbers would probably put him in
that. And the fact that I'm looking at this, 8 times All NBA, 8 times All Star, 3 time Defensive Player of the Year. That's impressive.
And
you're right. He is a career double-double.
There aren't many in that category who can match those accolades.
So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, he came into the league with the highest of expectations, and he has not lived up to those expectations. No championships under his belt, which I think that's another thing that people will measure. But at the end of it, he's still a reasonably young guy. He's still got a few years under his belt. He's only 31.
That's hard to believe, too.
Feels like he's like Kevin Willis, but yeah, he's been in the league 1,000 years. So, all right, with that, we'll close up. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm Lauren Fox. I'd like to thank our guests today, Corey Parker, the Bedford High Athletic Director. Always great to have Corey on, giving us some insight on what is going on in the athletic department as well as outside of it. And Andrew Hansen, who will be joining us on what we hope is a relatively frequent basis from here on out. course, if you have any ideas for topics, we would love to hear them. You can go to our Facebook page, which is at Fox on Sports, FOXXonSports.com. It'll just redirect you there. And as always, thank you for taking the time. We will join you next week from the studios right here on Meeting House Road on Bedford 105.1.